For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, FA Cup quarterfinals, nominative determinism's Carlos Tevez in the driving seat for Man City with another fine performance, while at Old Trafford, Rio quietly enjoys his Nando's takeout, but United left shaken, unlike Rafa's hand. Meanwhile, in the Premier League, look out top four, it's Liverpool, and look out top 17, it's QPR. We salute red-hot Redknapp. After getting his dog to be an accountant, he now gets good returns from Black Cats. All that plus Champions League. Can Arsenal do a Chelsea and beat Bayern at home? And Barcelona against Milan. Sid on the line on that one. There's time travel, post tweets and more in today's Football Weekly. Hello, everybody. Boy, it's a big show today. There's ever so much to talk about. Delighted to say that Paul McInnes is here to do some of that talking.
Hi, James.
Hi, Paul. Hey, you bought some glasses for yourself.
I did. I got a prescription and everything.
Great news. Jacob.
Didn't buy any glasses.
No glasses for you, friend. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Barry Glendinning is wearing glasses.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
All right. They're kind of like...
I've got a glass in front of me, which is water in it.
Excellent. Is it half full, Barry, or half empty?
Well, it's actually completely full.
Great news. All right, now, where do you want to start today? Because there was huge stuff going on at the bottom of the table. There was pretty big news going on at Anfield. You got the Champions League stuff. And, of course, the FA Cup quarterfinals.
Should we start in Scotland.
Okay, Barry, let's start in Scotland.
It was really interesting in Scotland.
Ordering off the menu?
I'm getting... It's a sign I'm getting too big for my boots.
Right.
Ordering off menu. And an Athletic beat Rangers at Ibrox.
I didn't know that.
And
who were they again?
Rangers,
I know.
Well, and an Athletic. They're like some village of mountainy men or something. You know. Highlanders wearing sort of sheepskin and wolfskin robes. That's what
they're are they not daubed in kind of yeah. blue mottle or something?
Yeah. Yeah. They live in, like, their dressing rooms are made of wattle and mud. But they beat Rangers at Ibrox, which was... Not even the biggest shock of the day, really.
All right.
Because elsewhere, Ross County beat Celtic.
No way!
Yeah. I came from 2-0 down to beat Celtic 3-2.
Wow.
So Celtic and Rangers fans who often complain that we don't give your team enough attention. There you go. Top of the show, we're talking about.
What about the big Stirling derby, though, as well?
Oh, yeah. What is it? 9?
Stirling 9, East Stirling 1.
Okay. What about Greece, eh? What about Olympiakos? Who, on the anniversary of their founding 88 years ago, won the Greek title. They've already, it's only, what is it? Is it February? It's March now, yeah? And they've already got themselves crowned champions for the 40th time. What, in 88 years? That's pretty good going, isn't it?
Congratulations, Olympiakos.
Yeah, all right.
Switzerland.
Yes. A ferret ran on the field.
Yeah, in a match between...
Zurich
and FC Thun.
It was great. Have you seen it, Barry?
I have seen it. A very persistent pine marten or ferret.
It's a pine marten, you're right.
Right. Which ran onto the pitch and evaded all the players until finally one of them...
Benito got it first and then he got bitten.
Yeah.
And then he released it. But then the goalie, who was equipped with gloves, which I think proved the difference, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah, because the goalie picked him up the same way the other player had, and he got bitten too, but the pine marten wasn't, his teeth weren't sharp enough to bite through the goalie's gloves.
Right.
But they were holding him incorrectly, you see.
How would you, as a son of a veterinarian, how would you pick up a pine marten?
Well, once you've caught him, catching him is the hard bit, but you just need to grab him by the scruff. And then, like you'd pick up a dog.
Well, they were all trying to grab him around that area, but every time he would just... arch his head round and bite their fingers.
Yeah, but if you grab him by the skin at the back of his neck...
Right, Barry's just demonstrating on Jacob as we speak.
and hold him like... Then he'll be powerless to do anything.
Oh, it's true. Jacob's snapping.
Yeah.
Nothing. Yeah. Interesting. You can let him go now, actually. Okay, that's fantastic. It's been a crazy week of European action.
Great Pine Martin news there.
And there's more on the way midweek, I wouldn't doubt. But in the meantime, FA Cup quarterfinals. How about a quick word... on them. Game at Old Trafford, Man United, Chelsea. Two big teams taking turns to be a bit bobbins. Would that be a fair reading of the game?
I think Ferguson was complaining about United running out of legs, basically, running out of steam after going 2-0 up against Chelsea and you're thinking it's going to be another terrible day for Rafa. This was just after they had that awful defeat against Steaua Bucharest, which kind of got a little bit awkward to watch that game because they were so bad. And there was one point where Torres got put through in that game and he basically just cleared it, got rid, which was a bizarre moment. And then Rafa Benitez
puts
on...
put through?
He was put through against Steaua Bucharest,
right,
and just knocked it back out of the area. He was clean through on goal. It was really strange. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But then he put on Eden Hazard, who scored a fantastic goal and got back to all and matter, nearly won it in the last minute. But
didn't
for
he,
a great
though?
Save from David De Gea.
Absolutely. I mean, there were some great, great goals in that game. I mean, look, we could just go ooh and aro. The Hernandez header.
I thought that was superb. Yeah. One of the best goals I've seen. That might sound a bit hyperbolic.
No, it was astonishing.
But yeah, it didn't seem to get the credit it deserved. But I thought just a cushioned lob, while running away from goal and kind of had to stretch for it. He's not the biggest anyway, so. But yeah, it was just a remarkable goal, and there were some great goals in that game.
Really,
the highlight of it for me,
I think, the Hazard goal.
Yeah. It was rather amusing that when Benitez made the substitutions, he brought on Mikel and Hazard, and the Chelsea crowd started chanting, "You don't know what you're doing," and they proceeded to completely change the game. And Hazard scored a fantastic goal, and Mikel played very well. And I would imagine Benitez was grinning rather smugly to himself afterwards.
Although the counter in these cases is the fact that if they were such obvious choices, or if they were such key players, why didn't you have them on in your starting 11? But Hazard's goal was an absolute beauty, wasn't it?
Well, I would counter that argument by saying that he clearly picked the team he thought was going to be able to do a job for him, and when that turned out not to be the case, he had the necessary savvy and chutzpah to change things and make them right.
Is it savvy to bring on just one of the best young players in Europe?
Yes.
And hope he does it for you when maybe he should have been in the starting lineup?
I've been talked before about Moses being more effective because he's more direct. And if you're playing Bar and you want to kind of get crosses onto his head as well and trouble Ferdinand or something, then there's an argument for playing Moses.
I don't know. I just find it strange that you look at that Chelsea team and want to break up that three of Hazard, Oscar and Mata when they're together and when they're on song. I mean, twice this season now they've taken United apart.
But also, Hazard is not renowned. I mean, I think there's talk that Chelsea could go and run to the title next season with that three and the more Premiership experience and stuff. But the question is always what they do when they don't have the ball.
Mm. Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Hazard's goal, as I insist, it was a real delight as well. But as you hint, Jacob, was De Gea's save even greater than any of those goals? Wasn't it just an amazing bit of goalkeeping
action?
Well,
yeah, you thought that was in, basically. And he does that with his feet sometimes.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
He's a good goalkeeper with his feet. And just like the one who was before him, Van der Sar, he was good with his feet as well.
But was he that good with his feet?
Probably not that good with his feet. But De Gea's... I know he struggles sometimes
he's
on crosses, but his...
He's an evolution of the goalie, I think.
Well, there was that save as well against Madrid, wasn't there, in the first leg, where I think it was Quantrao was at the back post and he should have saved it with his hands, and he just flew across with his feet again, De Gea.
Cool.
Amazing reactions.
Yeah. All right, well, that's the De Gea save. What about Ferdinand on poor old Fernando Torres?
It was a little bit aggro, wasn't it?
I thought that was a little bit out of order. Was there some previous to that, or what?
Well, actually, before we came on the pod, I was actually just typed in Fernando Torres, Rio Ferdinand into YouTube, and there were a couple of incidents when Torres was at Liverpool where they were clashing a little bit, and
ooh,
nothing like that yesterday, but... I think there was one point where Torres tried to run Ferdinand and he got barged off the ball. It was a fair challenge, and then he got up and Ferdinand was saying, get up, and which was, a little bit similar to what happened yesterday.
Right. Well, in this case, except that it was Ferdinand who ran up behind him,
yeah,
clattered him in the back of the head with his elbow.
And then pulled him up.
Yeah. Anyway, there you go. Possibly some suspension on the way for Rio, I think.
Hal Webb had his back to it, so
right,
I'm sure he'll...
Right, okay.
It's a timely result for Chelsea, though. Given what we'll come to later in the Prem, that chase for the Champions League spot's getting quite tough.
Absolutely, and ahead of the return match with Steaua Bucharest. What do you think about that one? 1-0 down from the first leg?
Yeah, 1-0 down. And they had that trouble against Sparta Prague, kind of a similar level of team probably, I'm assuming anyway, at Stamford Bridge in the second leg of the last round. But if they click against that kind of team, you'd think they should go through.
Well, anyway, yeah, we'll wait to see what happens with Chelsea. But a bad week for United, all in all, you have to say. Man United, bad week, no?
Yeah.
Good.
You do. Well, you don't have to.
All right.
No, you're not going. No one's going to punish people for saying they haven't had a bad week. But you could say it, and no one would criticise you for
in
that.
In the conventional commentary I got, you just feel that Sir Alex will feel this is a bad week.
It probably wasn't one of his better weeks. Yeah, getting knocked out of the Champions League and then getting turned over like that in a match they seem to be winning comfortably
by Rafa.
By Rafa, yeah.
And just the way that it happened in Madrid, the Madrid game. You know, they didn't block out. They didn't have an answer to losing their man. And then on Sunday, they didn't have the right attitude on the pitch. We'll be disappointed by those two things.
Mm.
And we've now got another tedious handshake debate to talk about as well.
Right. Okay.
Long handshake debate.
Non-handshake
debate. Meanwhile,
non-handshake, non-debate.
If they get through against Chelsea, whenever that rematch is going to be played, the replay, but nobody knows when it's going to be, but not for a while, I'm guessing.
Yeah, somebody was saying apparently it's going to be really difficult to schedule a replay, and I'm not exactly sure why. What's the
apparently the first available date is the 23rd of March when everybody's off on international duty or something.
Ah, right, okay.
Anyway, so we're not entirely sure when that game's going to take place, but if they do get through in that game, they will be playing Man City. No big surprise there? No?
I watched this game, and Manchester City swept Barnsley aside 5-0 and never, ever looked like there was going to be any hint of an upset. And it ended up being a really tedious game, to be honest. And at one point near the end, the camera panned to the bench where Roberto Mancini and Brian Kidd were sitting. And
playing
they just,
cards? Or?
They just looked really, really bored.
Right.
And like two old men sitting in the park watching the ducks or something.
Right.
And it was a kind of strange game. City played really, really well, and Barnsley were kind of unfortunate that City weren't even remotely complacent. They just went out to do a job and did it brilliantly against pretty poor opposition. I think when City were 3-0 up, Barnsley made some, or 4-0 up, Barnsley made some substitutions and started creating a couple of chances, the first chances they'd created in the game. And I think that angered City, who sort of scored a fifth just to put them back in their box, and then they kind of played out the last 15 minutes.
See, when Carlos Tevez went off and had a row with Mancini. Now,
did he have a row?
Is this kind of like manly kind of mutual?
Well, I don't know.
There did seem to be some sort of animosity there. I got the impression Tevez asked to come off. But he played very well, and there were suggestions he might not get picked because of the arrest on Thursday night and that he might not be in the right frame of mind to play, but he was superb.
He scored 5 of the last 7 goals and he set up the other 2. Carlos Tevez, eh? Remarkable. I tell you what, though, all these things are very interesting, but they're not Everton-Wigan. Everton-Wigan. Jacob, you were saying from March to May, Wigan turned into the best side of all time. Why, Jacob? Why?
I don't know why they do, but last season, well, there's no real explanation for why from August to February they had an absolutely terrible base, really. And then they can, last season we saw them beat Newcastle.
Is it like trees, do you think? A lot of trees look a bit drab and sparse throughout the winter, but then come spring they flourish.
Mm, maybe.
Perhaps so.
Well, that's to do with the temperatures and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, so, well, maybe in you know, the Latin,
they do have quite a lot of
Latin
foreign players, don't they?
Yeah. Maybe it is a temperature thing, but that doesn't explain why in August they're not revved up and raring to go and all that. Revved up, and raring to go.
No.
But they do actually start quite well in August and beginning of
do
September.
They?
Yeah, before
so it's a temperature
off.
Thing. Huh. All right, if they played in a more southerly league, they might
win the Greece Championship by March.
Right, I don't know, because Olympiacos are pretty strong. So they might have to watch out for them. But it is interesting. So what was it, 3 goals in 3 minutes?
3-4, 3-3, basically, yeah. And that can kind of colour the match in a certain way. You might think, OK, it's a freak couple of minutes there and Everton have been a bit unlucky. But really, they outplayed them from the first minute to the last and it was well-deserved. They took them apart. They've got so many nice players in that side, so many mavericks, really. You know, Kone, Maloney, James McArthur.
MacArthur.
Bosejor as well.
Right.
Yeah, Callum McManaman went back to Everton. It was and scored it was a very good finish for that second goal.
What I found curious going into this was that it seemed it was a match that didn't matter particularly for Wigan. They were, as Martinez then repeated afterwards, far more concerned about ensuring their Premier League survival. Whereas for Everton, there was this great redemption story about getting back to Wembley and perhaps David Moyes finally getting his hands on some silverware. But the two teams didn't play like that at all, did they?
No, Wigan really went for it and they put out a proper side, made a couple of changes, but it was still a good team. And Everton, they just seem to get a bit of a nosebleed.
A lot of criticism for Marouane Fellaini.
Mm.
Mm.
Didn't like being booed when he came off.
Mm.
I just thought that perhaps Everton already had their eye on the semi-final and perhaps considered this match something of a foregone conclusion. They may have sort of believed the press about the game. I think a lot of people considered that Everton winning was going to be a foregone conclusion. And their players certainly seemed to be just going through the motions. Some of their displays were absolutely appalling. Phil Neville's complete loss of form must be quite a concern for Everton fans. I don't doubt or question his professionalism for a moment. He seems to be a model pro who works very, very hard to sort of wring as much out of his twilight years as he can. But he's been shocking in recent games, and his assist for Wigan's second goal was a thing of great beauty. But he'll be really disgusted with himself over that. And Fellaini, his temperament is all quite suspect, and he just wasn't interested on Saturday.
Mm. Do you think it's okay to boo your best player, season?
So if he's not playing like he doesn't care, then why not?
I find the whole thing of booing players just ludicrous. But
what kind of protest do you like, Barry?
Pardon?
You don't like marching from the pub to the ground, and you don't like wearing scarves. What do you like?
I don't I think people should vote with their feet.
Okay.
If you're dissatisfied with your team's performances, stop going to watch them play.
How about doing a Harlem Shake video of protest?
You could do that too. Mm. Or chain yourself to a railing with a placard that says, "Careful now."
Right.
Outside Goodison Park, Father Ted style.
Different eras, but very much the same message.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well,
but
anyway.
Whereas I would endorse fans voting with their feet and not going to matches, they always counter with the incredibly lame argument that, if we don't go, someone else will go in our place. But I don't buy that. And if a game is on TV and the stadium is empty, then
it's quite harsh though. It's quite harsh though. But if you're just upset with, say, Marouane and Fellaini, then completely boycotting Everton as an entity, just because Marouane Fellaini is not really doing it.
But it's laughable to think that Marouane Fellaini cares a whit what some.
He did.
Pardon?
He did. He was gesturing to the fans to come on and play instead of him.
Oh really?
Yeah. He was. That was part of the argument apparently.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
But it's not something that's going to keep him awake at night.
Well, it might do. They're very, they're very competitive people, footballers.
Yeah.
Yeah. When, a couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, was in the QPR's mix zone after they lost to United, and said Jamie Mackey basically, he asked him, he said, "I've never seen you like this before. I've never seen you so down." And Mackey sort of lost it and
started blubbing.
Well, no, he's just said, "What do you expect? You know, it's we don't like to lose." And I'm furious.
They're human.
Yeah.
Players are human, Barry.
Well, then if you're going to boo Marouane Fellaini, keep booing him. All right. If you see him on the street, boo him in the street. If you see him in a bar or a restaurant, boo him. Even if he comes on and gives a man of the match performance, boo him for that.
Tough love. I like it, Barry.
Because some people say boo him.
It's the fickleness that upsets me. Right. So either boo him and keep booing him or don't boo him at all.
It's the secret to good parenting, that consistent message, isn't it?
All right, then. Cool. Wigan go into a Wembley semi-final with either Millwall or Blackburn. Yikes. And, we'll wait to see when Chelsea and Man United play and then who'll take on Man City in the other semi. For now, let's wrap up part one there and stand by to unleash some Champions League preview action on you right after this. Right, big midweek in the Champions League. You've got Barcelona taking on Milan, lots of other games, and, of course, Bayern Munich against Arsenal. Exciting news, Raphael Honigstein joins us now on the line. Hi, Rafa.
Hello, James.
Hi, good. You're up for it too. I like that. Good news for Arsenal, Bayern conceding two goals at home to Fortuna Dusseldorf on Saturday. Hey?
Yeah, they did. They also scored three goals.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But let's not spoil the surprise,
right.
The suspense. No, they were uncharacteristically sloppy against Dusseldorf, but I think the problem for Bayern is that they are so aware of their own superiority and they're almost sort of playing in their own league that even having an off day and conceding a couple of goals is not enough for them to not win a game. They still managed to come back, win 3-2, and it's now 8 from 8 in the league after the winter break, which no one's ever done before. And of course, they're 20 points clear, which also never has been achieved at this stage of the season. So as far as bad days at the office go, this was a pretty good one.
Right. Well, they're just 3 wins away now from becoming the earliest winners of the Bundesliga title ever. Some would say it would take a miracle on a par with Liverpool's Champions League final win in 2005 for Arsenal to overturn this 3-1 at home first leg deficit. What do you think, Rafa?
I agree with you. It would take some kind of football miracle for this to happen. And I'm not sure that Arsene Wenger and his men believe that this is a likely outcome. Listening to Between the Lines, I think it sounded more like he's very keen to avoid some kind of humiliating result that might have an influence on the domestic season, because I think that is where the focus is heading very quickly as far as the Gunners are concerned. And just don't see Bayern conceding 3 without replying. And as much as I'm trying to find the reasons for why this could happen, I'm really struggling.
Right, okay. Is it just me, Rafa, or have the acoustics changed dramatically? Have you moved position?
No.
All right, just sounds like you're in the bathroom or something.
Hiding. I'm in the bathroom, yes.
Ah, hiding from your children, perhaps.
Yes, that's right.
Excellent stuff. And, well, of course, nobody gave the last English club to go to Munich and take on Bayern much of a chance. And look what they did.
Yeah, but of course, they didn't beat Bayern. They only drew 1-1.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
And beat them on penalties. That won't be enough.
All right, then. Here comes Barry, Rafa.
Hi, Rafa. Notice in the other game, Schalke take on Galatasaray. Schalke had been pretty appalling in the build-up to that, the first leg, but since drawing in Turkey, they've beaten Dusseldorf, Wolfsburg and Borussia Dortmund. To what do you attribute this major turnaround? That's going to cost me a lot of money.
Explain, Barry, because not much has changed. If anything, I think that they perhaps realise that however bad they are, no one's going to relieve them of their interim manager, Jens Keller. And maybe they've decided, you know, we might as well start playing again because our lot's not going to change before the end of the season. That's certainly the line that Schalke very firmly held on to, and it seems to have worked. From having an absolute disaster since the winter break, it's now come to a point where they're back very much in contention for fourth. They're well placed to get into the quarterfinals of the Champions League, and they look like having a good season again. I mean, player by player, they're still a very decent side. The problem for the Galatasaray game is that Huntelaar will be out with a knee injury, so I think without him, they don't quite have the same firepower up front, and they'd be very much looking to the midfielders, to people like Draxler or maybe Farfan playing a little bit more forward than usually to score some goals. But going far into the competition, I think, will be difficult for them, especially without Huntelaar.
Rafa, thank you very much for that. You better go out now because they might be worrying about you. And look forward to getting your reaction perhaps after the Arsenal game.
All right, cheers.
Cheers, Raphael Honigstein. We were speaking to Raphael Honigstein at his convenience in a very real sense. And, of course, if Arsenal go out, it will be the first time since 1996 that England will have no sides, Paul McInnes, in the last eight.
Yeah, there was
Götterdämmerung.
There was a Henry Winter analysis of all this.
Really?
He said not to worry.
Did he?
And I suspect that's probably true.
Why? It's cyclical? That's usually the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Cyclical.
Well, yeah. I mean, last week it could have been that Real Madrid had gone out and Valencia went out, and tomorrow night Barcelona could easily go out. So you could have easily had no Spanish sides in the quarterfinal. You know, it's sometimes you can get too worried about who has the best league and read too much into this, I think, sometimes.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for that.
Only twice ever has a team come back from losing at home in the first leg of a Champions League tie.
Only twice?
Only twice. And Ajax and Inter, and they were only 1-0 down after the first leg.
Inter was against Bayern Munich, of course.
Yes. It's not inconceivable that Arsenal could, on their day, could score 3 goals against Bayern Munich, but it's impossible to see Bayern Munich not scoring.
Right. Barry has spoken. Now, in other Champions League action, of course, midweek, there's Malaga-Porto. Porto 1-0 winners in the first leg of this. That's a big game. And, of course, Barcelona-Milan. Sid Lowe currently sitting in an AVE train, speeding from Madrid to Barcelona ready to be at the Camp Nou for that match. Hopefully, we'll get a word from him later on, because he's certainly not answering at the moment. So let's just roll on to the Europa League. There's Europa League action on Thursday. Do you like the Europa League?
I do like the Europa League because it's on the telly I've got.
Excellent. Newcastle, now they've wrapped up their Premier League survival pretty much. It's all hands to the pump for Angie Makhachkala.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, they did. I mean, I thought they were very much in that game and looked very solid at the back, increasingly so. They've got a very experienced side now. And I think the talk is that after this, I mean, they're not safe. If Norwich aren't safe on 33, then Newcastle aren't safe on 33. But after that win, they feel a lot more confident and put more resources into pursuing. Because it's not that far away from the final now, if you get through this round.
Well, if you get through to this round, what are you in? The quarterfinals?
Quarters, yeah.
All right, so...
Still a bit, okay.
Still a bit.
But not that far.
No, not as far as it was.
From the final 128.
Okay. Inter, meantime, are hosting Spurs. Hard to see how this one's going to go, really. Or not, Barry?
Well, you'd know more about that than I would.
Well, Inter are a shambles, but I think anyone who saw them against Spurs will be aware of that. A shambles who've got other plans, who frankly can't wait for the season to finish up so they can head off and do whatever it is they want to do in other places.
What do you mean, on holidays?
Well, holidays, other clubs, whatever. They just seem to have they don't have the look of a team that's on a mission.
Yeah, well, I would expect Spurs to progress at their leisure, despite their wobble against Liverpool. And
why did Inter wear red last week?
Oh, some stupid marketing reason. It was dismal, wasn't it? They got that classic black and blue strip, and they're playing a team in white. They wore red. You'll be delighted to know that they got the comeuppance this weekend when at home to Bologna, they lost 1-0. And to be fair, it could have been 4 or 5. Bologna were all over Inter, who did have their goalkeeper, the very fine Samir Handanovic, who's pretty much the man who's kept Inter afloat this season. He wasn't there to keep them afloat on the weekend, and they lost duly against Bologna, putting in jeopardy their chances of European football, let alone a Champions League spot. Because Milan, of course, went ahead and won 2-0 against Genoa. In other Serie A news, just quickly to say that it now looks like Palermo, who started off the season with Sanino, fired him after 3 games to hire Gasperini, then sacked Gasperini to hire Malassani, then 19 days after that sacked Malassani and reappointed Gasperini. And now, after about a week of Gasperini being back in charge, going to fire him and bring back, yes, the circle is complete, Sanino. But we'll bring you word on that as it happens. We haven't, though, talked about the massive Liverpool-Spurs game at Anfield. Ooh, big game this one, wasn't it, Paul?
Yeah, no, it was. And I think it's Liverpool have obviously taken a lot of sucker from the result. I'm not sure the performance was all that convincing. I thought, ironically, the players who were most effective for them on the day were Jose Enrique and Stuart Downing, two players who've got physical strength. Spurs, I think, quite easily dealt with a lot of the little tricky men. And without playing very well and looking a bit tired themselves, looked to be cruising to victory until some ludicrous defensive errors.
Well, was it that? Was it Spurs beating themselves, or was it the quality of Liverpool shining through?
Liverpool's first goal was beautiful. It was really nice and an exceptional take from Suarez. But it was largely, to me, down to Jose Enrique's strength in and around the box.
And what about Coutinho?
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah.
But I think that was all right, and people say, oh yeah, because he had a little dinky touch. That was the telling thing. But actually, it was Enrique holding off two defenders and getting the ball out to Suarez,
right,
and then Suarez's finish. But Spurs, after that, roused themselves. Then they got 2-1 up. They looked to be in total control, and it was two ludicrous, both similar passes, kind of little lofted passes back when they should have been turning the other way, that gave them Liverpool 2 goals.
What do you think, Barry? This is Liverpool's third straight win. They're closing in on the top four.
Yeah, it's a good win, and probably be churlish to nitpick, because teams tend not to make those mistakes that Spurs did unless they're forced into them. But I wasn't hugely convinced by Liverpool's performance, but the fact of the matter is that they'd just beaten the form team in the Premier League, and it's an excellent result for them, from which they can take great heart. And now people are talking about maybe they'll, you know, finish fourth. It's not out of the question. It isn't out of the question. I still say it's very unlikely. And they've still only beaten two teams in the top half of the table. So by their own quite high standards, isn't particularly good.
But they've beaten teams from the top half, two teams from the top half in the last 3 games.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, momentum is building.
Yeah, and I sounded churlish, didn't I, Barry? And I don't mean to sound churlish either. Mm. Sometimes, you know, you win games without playing particularly well. Or
well, I wasn't specifically having a go at you. Just a lot of what I was reading in the aftermath of the game was people not giving Liverpool any credit at all for the win, and that, which I think is very unfair.
Mm. All right, then. That's it for part two. Coming up shortly, post bottom of the table excitement and Sid.
This week on the Guardian Audio Edition, David Cameron may last, even as he leads his MPs to their doom. Hugo Chavez, the poor boy from the plains who became a left-wing figurehead. Google Glass, is it a threat to our privacy? And in this week's audiobook review, we return to a classic of children's literature, Clive King's Stig of the Dump, and set off on a brand new adventure series with Andrew Beasley's The Battles of Ben Kingdom. To subscribe for free to the Guardian Audio Edition, go to audible.co.uk/guardian or find us on SoundCloud, iTunes and Audioboo. The Guardian Audio Edition, a new way to get the whole picture.
Okay, part three begins with an exciting treat. Sid, you're just pulling out of Saragossa. That's not Saragossa or anything. It's a town. Saragossa.
Be very careful, because Saragossa in Spanish would also mean enjoys it, or Sara enjoys it.
Oh, really? Wow. Mm. Cool. All right. Well, as your steel torpedo hurtles into the Spanish heartland, you're heading to Barcelona.
You know,
of course.
That fan fiction's really got to you, hasn't it?
Yeah, and chapter two's almost finished as well. And yeah, so you're off to Barcelona, Sid.
I am, yes, yeah. To hear the two managers and some players speak today, and then to be at the game for tomorrow against Milan.
All right, now I can picture the scene. You're in a crowded carriage. You're keeping your voice down a little bit so as not to disturb.
I'm trying to be more or less respectful of the other people in the carriage.
I'm liking it. It sounds good, actually. All right, well, let's not keep you too long, Sid, although I bet they're fascinated, as we are, to get your take on the chances of Barcelona turning things around against Milan. My view is this: if you had to pick one team to come back from 2-0 down, okay, they're going through a rocky patch, but it might be Barcelona. But if you had to pick one team to fold after being 2-0 up from the first leg, it would definitely be Milan. He's gone. I can't believe it. We had him. I blew it with my long question. I came all Garth Crooks on him, and that's what I got for it.
Yeah.
Well, we'll try and get him back up, but that question very much destined to hang suspended in the ether.
It affords you the opportunity. I can't help thinking you may have engineered that tunnel.
The smile on his face.
Yeah. So, James, do you think, Milan will crumble?
The thing is, I don't know what to think in this as in so many other subjects, because Milan have a great record against Barcelona. In 1994, the Champions League final, when nobody gave them any chance against the Cruyff side, and they absolutely destroyed them. But they do have this recurring habit of... We saw this against Arsenal last season, though, when they were 3-0... What were they
up? 4-0 up.
4-0 up, and they were 3-0?
3-0 at half-time.
Yeah, crazy,
yeah.
No?
Yeah.
But the most famous case being when they beat Deportivo La Coruña 4-1 at the San Siro and were through and plain sailing, and then went to Coruña and then got beaten 4-0, and it was hideous. Hideous. But, you know, informed people say Milan are going to score, so Barcelona might win. It might be 2-1, but Milan will still go through. I don't know. I think that they had a brilliant night, Milan, against Barcelona the first time, and I don't know if they'll be able to pull off a night like that again.
Well, if Barcelona do overturn this, they will have to do something no team has ever done before in the Champions League, and that's overturn a two-goal first-leg defeat.
Really?
Without having scored.
Really?
An away goal.
As I say, if any team could do it, surely it would be Barcelona, although this young Milan side is overturning expectations all over the place, especially because they actually work hard. You know, they have their forwards working hard, and they have width and all sorts of things that Italian sides in Europe don't all that often have. Barcelona, of course, got back on track, to use a Sid-related metaphor, on Saturday with the 2-0 victory over who else but Deportivo La Coruña. And it was their first clean sheet in 14 games, Paul, which is very significant.
Congratulations to them all.
All right.
Messi scored for the
17th league game in a row. That's some dip in form he's having.
It is, isn't it? Michael Hahn has just hoved into view to curtail our Spanish chat.
I just make one other... I know if Sid was on, he would want me to talk about Real Sociedad's magnificent win against Atletico Madrid in the Vicente Calderon Stadium. It's the first points Atletico have dropped this season at home, and it means they are no longer second. They've been leapfrogged by Real Madrid.
Amazing, isn't it? Amazing. Quite a run-in set to happen in the ever-competitive Liga. Michael Hahn now joins us.
Hello, James.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
It's always a pleasure, James.
Good. You know Paul. You know Jacob. You know Barry. All right, listeners, you know Michael. And I imagine this is a very exciting time for you, Michael, isn't it?
Well, it's slightly less depressing time than it has been in recent weeks.
Two straight wins?
I just feel sorry for Jacob, who seems to have been covering terrible QPR performances for large chunks of the last few months. He gets moved off. Paul Doyle starts covering it for The Guardian. We're winning.
No, I saw them at Southampton.
Oh, you were Southampton, weren't you? Yes.
Yeah, I kick-started it.
Yeah. With all due respect to Jacob and his kick-starting, what's been the difference for Rangers?
Well, on Saturday, it was Andros Townsend. But you can't say he's been the difference for Rangers since he wasn't playing against Southampton. I mean, actually, there is no pattern with Rangers at the moment. The team changes from game to game. I mean, Ari is clearly looking for the right set of terrific lads on a game-by-game basis. I mean, the one consistent thing when he's been fit to play has been Loic Ramey, who has been really, really terrific. Finally, QPR have a striker who can actually finish, which is something we've been lacking for a while.
Excellent news. They're playing like a Harry T. That seems to be the reaction.
They were playing exciting football on Saturday for the first time in a very, very long time. I mean, really direct. A lot of width from Hoylett, who in the last couple of games has been very good after we had such hopes for him at Loftus Road when he joined last summer, and he instantly disappointed. But the last couple of games have been very, very lively. The sadness has been the absence of the beloved Adel Turab.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask. Is that the big difference, the fact that he's been binned?
Well, I don't know. I mean, Tarabd is the proverbial mystery wrapped inside an enigma, etc., etc., etc. But there's a pattern with Tarabd, which is a new manager joins the club, takes a look at Tarabd, moans a bit about him, drops him, then picks him back. Tarabd wins a load of games single-handedly, plays fantastically or gets results single-handedly, then has one bad game, then gets dropped again. I mean, and this is what's happened. He had a poor game against Man United a few weeks ago, and Harry obviously decided he really didn't like it. But the real reason for QPR's success on Saturday actually is kind of unrelated to footballing reasons. It's tied in with the American rock band The Hold Steady. This time last year, when we played Liverpool, Paul McInnes is miming.
Surprisingly enough, it's got something to do with The Hold Steady.
No, truly. Liverpool last season, when we came from behind to win 3-2, kick-starting the run, I forced my son to give up his season ticket and I took the swing of The Hold Steady to that game. Saturday, a mutual friend of ours in town from America, so I forced my son to give up his season ticket. We scored 3-1. Match of the day montage on Saturday, played a Hold Steady song over the clips of the relegation threatened song. Oh yes, I mean, this is science. You don't mess with science.
Right. Okay, well, studies have pretty much determined that it is the hope that kills you. So how concerned are you at this false dawn, that it might turn out to be a false dawn?
I refuse to say anything other than we're still going down.
Really?
Yeah, I clung to that line all last season.
Because next up is another big, big game, Aston Villa.
It's not even a six-pointer, it's a 24-pointer.
Well, what are you going to call the one up with Wigan after that?
Oh, 48-pointer.
That's at least.
You know,
if
we can accumulate enough of these, actually, 48 points, and it's multiplying up to 96
points.
Wouldn't
it be great?
We will break all league points records.
If the season was just double or quits every week. But you've got to be worried about that, because a lot of these teams that you looked at the table, I know QPR are doing this themselves, but you looked at the table, the fixture list before, oh, that's an easy game, Wigan, that's an easy game, Aston Villa, but hey, they're all awakening, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they're all teams that can play football, but are also extraordinarily weak. I mean, the fact is, for all this, the great escape's on, QPR are still bottom.
How many points, Barry?
From safety.
23. They have 23 points, they're 4 points behind Reading and 7 points from safety.
The one thing QPR have in their favour is I think they're probably the best defence of any of the relegation.
4 points.
Same points as Reading.
Same points as Reading.
Yeah.
Sorry, okay, I'll ask that again.
I was looking at goals scored. QPR
have, I think, the best defence. So they've got the best defensive record of any of the teams down at the bottom. The problem's been scoring goals, and especially with Samba added. The last two games, Samba has been immense, not just in terms of his actual physique, which is immense. To be honest, I look rather thinner and fitter than Chris Samba, but I'm less commanding in the air. And he has been amazing the last couple of weeks.
Excellent.
If QPR do manage to stay up, what does that say about the Premier League? Because they're a circus. They're so badly run. They released their accounts last week, and they're just gruesome reading. I mean, these are the accounts for 2011-12, when they made a loss of 23 million, and it's presumably that loss, considering all the players they've bought since then, last summer and this January, the losses are going to be huge. And the capacity of your ground is 18,500, which is just, where the hell are they ever going to make this money back from?
Well, because they won't make it from ticket sales. They make it from the massive TV revenue. Yeah, I mean, in a sense, it's wise investment, no?
Because yes, it's a gamble. They're gambling on next season's TV deal, yeah. I mean, if they go down...
We all are, but anyway, yeah.
If they go down, clearly there's going to be problems. But then, let's be honest, QPR are not unique in being a terribly run football club, are they?
No, that's true.
Fair enough. What about Aston Villa's win at Reading?
They're playing with confidence. They're still playing slightly ineptly at the back, but they are playing with confidence. Gabby Abondohor's goal was a cracker. I think it's going to be a dynamite game next weekend.
Yeah, I'm missing. I have to go to South Africa for work.
What's the Hold Steady's input next week?
At the moment, I think they're recording, but I'm trying to organise a whip round to get them to come over and play a one-off show in Birmingham so they can go to the game on their own or something.
Right.
What does your son, by the way, think of, you know, when daddy just says, oh, sorry, you can't come to the match with me I'm going with my rock and roll friend?
To be fair, he misses, you know, one or two home games a season. He comes to away games. He's a nine-year-old boy. It's not like he's actually, you know, no, I'm depriving you of your football. You have only have seen 25 games this season.
Michael, does he actually watch the whole 90 minutes?
Yeah, well, yes, he watches and despairs, but it's quite sad. The other week he said to me that he hopes QPR do get relegated because then he might see us score some goals again.
All right, yeah, it's a positive outlook, not a negative one.
Well, to hope for relegation.
Well, I think a man's got to know, and indeed, in this case, a boy's got to know his limitations.
But the problem is Premier League football. I mean, I don't know if Paul, maybe you feel the same, as it also as a supporter of a club who got promoted recently, that it feels like there's so little to play for except for avoiding relegation. If you're out of the relegation zone, so much of the football is meaningless.
That's all true for all teams apart from the top four. But I enjoy watching the contests. I enjoy watching us play against good players and trying to...
Norwich Southampton?
I did. I very much enjoyed it. I was there and the conditions were atrocious. Yeah. It was torrential sleet. And we played pretty poorly, but we had moments of sparkle. The front four of Southampton, I think, are very able players. It was good to watch them play too. And there was a bit of zip to it, probably because the ball was skimming off the surface, and there was that ludicrous dive by Holt. We've all gone off Grant Holt, by the way.
Was that a ludicrous dive when he had his shirt tugged?
The first half that was a penalty.
Oh, the one that he got the penalty for.
And everybody knew he was going to miss it. And the keeper, you know, been told by his coach to dive to his right, so he stood one step to his right, giving Grant the whole of the left-hand side of the goal to shoot, and he still shot his right.
Right.
Terrible.
Someone on, I think, the Guardian thread beneath the game made the point that it's a miracle that Rochdale, when they had Ricky Lambert and Grant Holt, didn't go on to win the Champions League.
Well, the Saints fans were calling Holt a fat Ricky Lambert, which I thought was a bit of a diss to Ricky Lambert, really.
Yeah. Right. Oh, well, terrific stuff. They're 0-0 in that game, very much.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Sun said it today, that we are 0-0ing our way to safety. And I think that's what we might end up doing.
Okay, well, there are worse fates.
Could I just ask Michael how bad Sunderland were on Saturday?
Sunderland were terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, really poor. The moment of fear when they got the goal, that was a really nice, quick break. But that was pretty much the only thing they did that looked terribly incisive during the whole game.
Michael, that's fantastic. I did mention that we were going to do some posts and time trial stuff, so I'll just quickly do these and then we'll wrap up shop because, you know, it is that time. A random bloke, we were talking about Terminator and got our terminology completely wrong on Monday.
Yeah, that was a schoolboy error from Ian McIntosh.
Really was, wasn't it? Random bloke says, I can't help but feel that Skynet didn't deserve to win the battle with humanity. Not only did it give us a sporting chance by sending gradually improving technology back to points in our development where we could just about deal with it, rather than, say, sending the T-1000 back to medieval times to wipe out everyone on its own, yeah? But it also went to the trouble of making a living skin for its robots, but then making them all look like Arnie. And I also enjoyed the way the T-800 had the ability to mimic any human voice, but chose to speak in a slow Austrian accent so as to draw maximum attention to it. That's a very, very good point. random bloke. Although 23 Kid points out that if Skynet had wiped everyone out in medieval times, it would never have been created in the first place. Time paradox, eh? Mm. Right.
Wow,
yeah.
That's really blown me, actually.
Yeah, that has, actually. Cool. It doesn't matter, says 23 Kid. There's more. Doesn't matter either what time period they send it back to, seeing as it was always met by the human's own time-travelling robot. Right, so if they'd sent it back to medieval times, they would have just sent the Arnie model back to meet it. That's brilliant. Well done, 23 Kid.
They'd have been fighting, but just hurling cattle at each other from
catapults.
Well, they'd
still been robots, you know, so... Yeah. They could have done robots.
They might have taken the guns back in time with them as well, Barry.
No, I don't think you could. I recall, the premise is very much you arrived with absolutely nothing. Do you remember Arnie emerging naked?
Oh.
Yeah. It's a scene that stuck with me.
So he'd had a pike and a mace.
And that could have been terminated with siege engines. About his genitalia. That would have been great.
He should have been like... he could have gone to play for Annan Athletic.
Marvellous stuff. And on that note, we come to the end of today's Football Weekly. Thursday, we'll be back with the reaction to the Champions League last 16 action, and hopefully a reaction from Sid Lowe. In the meantime, many, many thanks to Jacob Steinberger. I think you're back on Thursday, you're not,
yep.
Jacob? Yo. And Paul McInnes and Barry Glendenning and Michael Hamm. Good luck with the rest of your season. And special guest producer Matt Hill. And have a super week. We'll catch up with you Thursday.